Hudson Sports Talk with Lawton Swan.
Just call me Swanee.
Tiger style. Tiger style.
Finally, Clemson Sports Talk has come back to Drive Time. Hello, everybody. Lawton Swan back in the saddle. Once again, it is the show that shakes the Southland. Clemson Sports Talk for you each and every afternoon as you make your way around the great state of South Carolina and beyond, listening to us on incredible radio stations like Fox Sports Radio 1400 The Midlands, heard around the world on the iHeart Radio application. Download it today. We'd love to have you be a part of the program. Coming up on the show, we'll talk a little local softball here on the program. As a little controversy took place last night between Lexington High School and Somerville. Got a connection to that. I'll let you know what that is here in just a few minutes. Obviously, speaking of softball, excited still about the Clemson Tigers softball team hosting a regional for the first time, just the third year in the program, and they are hosting a regional. And then, of course, there are topics galore on the front of college football and college sports to get into here today on a Tuesday afternoon. You can be a part of the show as well, 803-450-0086, 803-450-0086. Mike Yuva scheduled to join us in hour number two. Always appreciate his insight. We'll find out a little bit more about the Beamer ball. I have said since he was hired, I thought that Shane Beamer was the right guy for the job here in Columbia for the South Carolina Gamecocks. I also have said that I thought at some point he would leave Carolina to go to Virginia Tech. I thought it might have been when the job just came open most recently. Maybe that was, as they say, too soon. But perhaps maybe one day. But until then, I think he's got a chance to build South Carolina into a nice program. I don't know that they'll ever eclipse Clemson by any means, what the Tigers have done, or even stand on the same ground as Clemson unless the Tigers regress back. Because Clemson's at an elite level. South Carolina's never been at that elite level. Even in the midst of their greatest run of success under Steve Spurrier, they weren't sniffing college football playoffs that didn't exist, but you know what I'm saying. The BCS or national championships weren't quite there, just out of their grasp, if you will. All that being said, we're also going to talk about Chris Paul again. I talked about his legacy yesterday, taking a big hit. Boy, over the past 24, having a chance to dive into that a little bit further. Huge hit is what took place when the Phoenix Suns were defeated in 7 games by the Dallas Mavericks after leading that series 2-0. I'll give you the rundown on that and Patrick Beverley choosing violence when it came down to his conversation on ESPN. Surrounding Chris Paul. But let's begin with Lexington High School softball team, the girls team, taking on Somerville in a game that would have advanced Lexington into the Class 5A lower state championship. Now, my son, as you know, plays soccer. And one of his teammates on the team, his father, was actually on the call, Matt Warren. His daughter, Livy, was at the plate in the bottom of the 8th inning, first batter, first pitch in a 5-5 game when this happened.
So here we go. Livy steps in, single her last at bat. There's a drive to right field. It's good! Livy Warren walks it off! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Woo! Wildcats win!
If you can't tell, that's my daughter. Wildcats walk it off. Bottom of the eighth. We'll see you Friday at Wildcat Stadium.
All right, so that's my buddy. That's my buddy Matt on the call. His daughter hitting the home run that at the time everybody thought was the game winner. 6-5, bottom of the eighth, game over. Eighth grader, by the way, is Libby. And apparently that will not be the case as things were, I guess, adjudicated inappropriately there by the officials. So there was a moment late in the game where there was a, quote, rule interpretation protest by Somerville High School and was acknowledged during the contest. After review, the protest was upheld, and the two teams will meet today at Lexington High School to begin at the point of protest, according to the South Carolina High School League spokesman, or in a statement. The two teams will have to finish the game starting at 5:30. They'll start the resume contest with two outs in the top of the eighth inning with Somerville batting and the score tied at 5. So, essentially, I guess like a play before the home run that walked it off. The game was delayed more than 30 minutes Monday night as both teams and the umpires discussed Somerville's attempt to pinch hit for a flex player. The umpires did not allow the move, and Somerville played the end of the game in protest, officially making their concerns known with two outs in the top of the eighth inning. The winner of Tuesday's completed game will advance to the Class 5A Lower State Championship, and the loser will have to play Chapin in an elimination game on Wednesday. And so here's my point. And again, shout out to Matt. What an awesome moment to be able to call his daughter hitting what at the time was the game-winning home run in the playoffs.
There's a drive to right field! It's good! Libby Ward walks it off! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Woo!
Oh, yeah, Matt. Get after it, buddy. Nothing like a little nature boy.
Woo!
And then he also drops this line, and possibly my favorite.
If you can't tell, that's my daughter.
So this awesome, incredible moment, and again, listen, I have zero dogs in the fight. Like, my kids will go to River Bluff, rivals of Lexington. I got nothing against Somerville. But here's my thing, and this is what I don't understand about this. I don't understand how you can have officials, umpires, in a game of this magnitude, and I know, again, it's softball, and it's high school, but how in the world can the officials in that moment, in that game, not get the call right so that when the protest is filed on either side, like, I really could care less, but this is a huge moment, a huge event, and the officials blow it? We are in an era where there are cell phones. We are in an era where this is a correctable issue right at the point that it happens. We're going to call timeout. We're going to get on the horn, and we're gonna make sure this is worked out right. This is not, we got to go to a payphone. We got to drive to a gas station. Dude, everybody there. We can pull up the rules online. How is that not officiated appropriately? I would be out of my mind if I'm Lexington that you have to go out and replay this game. And I get it. If you're Somerville, yeah, it happens. Sometimes refs make mistakes. I talk about that all the time. But how in the world these young ladies have to go out and play this final moment of this game again is beyond me. Absolutely absurd. I mean, if this was college sports, wouldn't matter. The call is what it is. If this was pro sports, it wouldn't matter. The call is what it is. And I get it. It's not either of those. And it's high school sports, and we want it to be fair and equal and everything to be played out the correct way. But for crying out loud, when it's a issue of a flex player in an attempt to pinch hit for said player, how in the world the officials don't get that right? It's not, Was it a, you know, ball or strike? Was it out or safe? Fair or foul? This is a pretty clear deal that should have been able to be cleaned up appropriately at the time so the game could have been concluded. And can you imagine this too? Being a Somerville fan and driving all the way back up here. And again, they were going to have to drive up, I guess, anyway, what, tomorrow maybe and play Chapin. But driving all the way back up here today, potentially lose and then have to do the whole trek again. And it could end as quickly as it did last night with a home run. I mean, that could be it. Look, I've been involved in things like this, not necessarily in sports, but in other competition where the judges may have misjudged. One of the things I was involved in was a competition in high school. And we posed the question. And I never will forget this because we got disqualified for breaking a rule. And the rule said that the way the rules read, it said you can't touch inside of a certain area. And so we asked a clarifying question. We said, so let me ask you, if we are standing on something, is that deemed touching? And they said it was not. And so we went ahead and did our plan. And then at the end, we found that we were penalized for going into the area where we weren't supposed to go. But they told us that touching and what we were doing was not touching. So, if you want to know what we did, we put paper on the ground and slid our feet. We never touched our feet to the ground, technically, based off the rules of the letter of the law, if you will, yet we were still penalized for that. Now, that, because we had asked about it, and it wasn't a competition where the other team was eliminated either, mind you, both teams moved on. But we had asked specifically. And so in this circumstance, to me, the problem is that the official in this sense, or the umpire in this sense, should know whether or not that is or isn't the rule. And the people we asked knew, and they told us. And so we took them at their word. In this case, it's apparent the umpires didn't know what the rule was or how it should be adjudicated, and they did it wrong. And that's a little bit, it's a subtle difference, but it is different nonetheless. And again, what I don't understand, and I want to go back to this, we are not in an era where this, A, should have been missed by the main crew that's on the site, because one would assume, and my dad has been a part of the South Carolina High School League many years ago, but one would assume that even if we buy into a theory that there is poor officiating throughout high school sports in the state of South Carolina. And listen, it probably is because they don't get paid a lot. They got to listen to a bunch of Bozo the Clowns yelling at them from the stands. And like my man, Frank Martin, former South Carolina basketball head coach, always said, I don't say boo. Not to the coach, not to the officials. And so they don't make enough money. He said, how much could they possibly make? Like $25? Maybe. I hope my Frank Martin's good. Rate my Frank Martin at Clemson Sports on Twitter. 10 is, man, you're spot on. 1 is, buddy, I didn't know who that was. You can also text us your response to that, 803-450-0086. I hope I do a good Frank Martin. I try to do a good Frank Martin. Nonetheless, I just can't imagine that when you're down to the final couple of games of the season, that you can't scratch together three, I'm assuming they have three officials out there, three guys who would be at the tip, the top of the mark when it comes down to knowing the rules and knowing the substitution rules and knowing how to make all of that happen. It just seems too easy. But yet here we sit in under an hour and a half from Lexington, taking on Somerville again, and this moment potentially erased from existence. And it seems like the video is erased from YouTube.
So here we go. Libby steps in, single her last at bat. There's a drive to right field. It's good! Libby Ward walks it off! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Wildcats win! Woo! Wildcats win! If you can't tell, that's my daughter. Wildcats walk it off. Bottom of the eighth. We'll see you Friday at Wildcat Stadium.
Dude, I just can't. Every time I hear Matt, oh, man, that's my daughter. And Matt is a great guy, great family. And I mean, listen, I hate it for Somerville that it played out the way it did. But if this is any other league, the way it's called. And I agree, the officials should know. Shame on the officials for not getting it right in that moment. Because let me tell you what doesn't change if the officials call this the other way and they allow the substitution to happen and Lexington gets out of the inning. Do you know what doesn't change?
There's a drive to right field. It's good. Libby Ward walks it off.
That right there, that doesn't change. Nothing that happened the inning prior makes that moment go away. And that's the thing about it. Now, again, I guess you could say, well, but if they scored a run and blah, 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 blah. But really, really, two outs in the previous inning, I'm supposed to believe that all of a sudden that's going to – I don't. Not in the least. And so, look, either one of two things needs to happen, because when I've seen this at the high school level before, it's just bizarre. It's the only place where protests like this happen. You know, people get all upset about a call, a ruling. – Either A, South Carolina High School League, get it right, right? Have your officials get it right, adjudicate it appropriately. Have somebody on the site, a rules expert. I don't care what you have to do. You're in the playoffs, for crying out loud. There can't be that many softball games going on around the state. And then number two, put in a suck it up buttercup policy. Just put it in. I mean, I'm telling you, if this is college, you're not replaying it. If this is the national championship, oh, well. You know what? Clyde Edwards-Helaire's hand went out of bounds against Clemson in the LSU national championship game in a huge moment. His foot went out of bounds. His hand, everything went out of bounds. He all but did a somersault out of bounds. And you know what? Clemson didn't review it. That's on Clemson. The officials didn't review it. That's on the officials. Yours humbly thought it was a huge play, a big momentum swing. I still do. But you know what I don't sit in here and do every single day? Whine and complain about it. Talk about, hey, it's the breaks of the game, man. You get some bad calls. Sometimes the play goes against you, the ruling goes against you, where I feel like my situation in high school in a competition versus that is, you know, we said, hey, can we do it? They said, yeah, and then then they hit us with the penalty. Hold up. You said we could do it. That's a little bit different. Let me give you what that would be. I tried to give this earlier, but here's the scenario. Somerville substitutes. Somerville scores a run. Lexington doesn't. And then at the end you go, hey, Somerville, sorry about that. You weren't allowed to do that. Coming up on the program, NIL deals filter down to the high school level. I said it would happen. It's happening. We'll tell you about it when we get back here on the show that shakes the Southland. It is Clemson Sports Talk. Back at it on a Tuesday afternoon, Clemson Sports Talk, Lawton Swan. Well, I told you so. And don't say I didn't tell you so. that we would see NIL filtering down to high schools. And the only thing that has stopped it in some states is the legislation in that state. But Alyssa and Giselle Thompson,
two no fees or
high
minimum
school sisters, have become the first athletes in high school signed by Nike to a name, image, and likeness deal. Alyssa and Giselle are sisters. One is a junior. One is a sophomore at Harvard Westlake High School in Los Angeles. Both signed a deal for an undisclosed agreement only days after Nike announced deals with UCLA soccer player Raylan Turner and Stanford golfer Rachel Heck. The Thompsons posted on their Instagram page showing a trip to Nike on Saturday that resulted in an NIL deal. Both sisters are committed to play soccer at Stanford and are members of the U.S. national team youth soccer system. The NCAA approved a policy to allow college student athletes to profit off of their name, image, and likeness back in July of 2021. Since then, athletes have been able to secure agreements like this one. High school athletes, however, have to abide by state laws and rules formed by their high school associations. But because the Thompson sisters, are in California, they can take advantage of it right now. So there you go, folks. You wanted it. A lot of you wanted it. High school kids now being paid. High school kids being paid. 803-450-0086. It is a weird, weird sports world we are currently living in. That's for sure. One of the other things, too, briefly on this front, if I may, I am hopeful that some of this will dwindle for a couple of reasons. One, I don't know what these girls got. I don't know how much it'll be worth. But I would think that at some point, a high school coach is not going to care diddly about your high school, you know, your NIL deal or how much money you're making. And there's not going to be the local pressure, per se, put on the coach to win at a high level in some of these areas, even if they have a star that's being paid, maybe even less if the kid's being paid a ton of money, which means, you know what? Hey, Alyssa, Giselle, why don't y'all park it over here on the bench for a little bit in this game? Like, that's the other thing, and I'm not saying this coach wants to lose, but I am saying the old phrase, getting too big for your britches, might fit here perfectly at some point. And maybe because Nike and others realize that these coaches aren't going to be influenced by what players are getting the most NIL money, even though they might arguably be the best player. If they're bad, you know, if they're not a good teammate, you ride over there on the pond for a little while. Let me know when you catch a splinter. And so maybe some of that will calm the waters, make, I guess, businesses is the word I'm looking for here, make businesses be a little more protective of the cash that they're throwing out there. The other thing I think you do have to continue to monitor, though, with all of this is a different animal in and of itself for high school sports and high school coaches, is the belief that players will potentially try to turn pro early. And we are seeing that as well. As a matter of fact, the Georgia Bulldogs taking advantage of that recently as one of the top defensive backs, Marcus Washington Jr., reclassified and will be a part of Georgia's 2023 recruiting cycle. There was no mention of the fact that this could be for the benefits of NIL, but one thing is for sure. In states where players like Texas with Quinn Ewers, who went to Ohio State, collected some bank and then returned, the Lone Star State with the Longhorns got that money, that Ohio State money, and then fled back home to quarterback Texas in his home state. I mean, that's going to be something that we might see as well moving forward. Guys going to schools they're not even really committed to, just to cash a little check very early on in their collegiate careers. And then if that is the case, in my opinion, you might see businesses again pull back from the initial NIL deals, which maybe, as I said, it might kind of settle the waters a little bit. But right now, it is wide open. And there is no certainty, only uncertainty, in my opinion, surrounding NILs, the future of college sports, and where we as fans are headed. Remember in the Wizard of Oz when Dorothy starts off in the Emerald City? And she's following the yellow brick road, and it's a tight spiral in that yellow brick road. But there was also a red brick road there, maybe a kind of a off-white border brick road that there may have been a couple of brick roads. And I quite frankly don't know which one we're going down right now. I don't know which way we're going. Maybe we chose the red brick road. Where that leads us is not the Emerald City. I guess we'll see what happens with NIL moving forward. But as I projected, it has already filtered down to the high school ranks. With a quick break here on a Tuesday afternoon on the show that shakes the Southland, it is Clemson Sports Talk. Stay with us. Back at it on a Tuesday, Mike Yuva coming up in hour two. Of course, lots to get to here, and appreciate you hanging out with us. Several topics on point here today, including some conversations about the NBA. We'll try to get into that in just a little bit. But with Mike on the horizon, I have attempted here on this press of late to keep you abreast of everything happening in the world of professional sports as well. During this time of the year, the time of the year that many of you would have considered the dark time of the year, the downtime. Tonight, 7 o'clock on TNT, the Tampa Bay Lightning take on the Florida Panthers, game one of that series. Then at 9:30 on TNT, you've got the St. Louis Blues taking on the Colorado Avalanche. Playoff hockey, good stuff. NBA coming up tonight as the conference finals begin. In the East at 8:30, it'll be the Celtics at the Heat. Miami's favored by 2 points in that game. Then tomorrow, you get the second conference finals as we head west. 9 o'clock, Golden State hosting Dallas on TNT. So NBA playoffs down to the final four, so to speak. Hockey at the Elite Eight level. And as you are well aware by now, I am all in with the Hurricanes, have been. Do not follow them at all in the regular season. If you told me the Hurricanes didn't make the playoffs, it's not like I would have known. I'm not tracking it to keep up with it during the year. But when they get in the playoffs, I do keep up with it. And the Carolina Hurricanes are indeed in the playoffs, taking on the New York Rangers. That series begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow on ESPN, followed up by Edmonton and Calgary facing off at 9:30, both games on ESPN. It is kind of funny to me, just a little bit, that the playoffs have presented us with two teams in the state of Florida, the exact opposite of a place where hockey thrives. Tampa Bay and Florida battling in an elimination, not game, but series. And then the only two teams from Canada remaining in the playoffs, eliminating, going after each other with Edmonton and Calgary. So we'll eliminate a team from Florida, and we will eliminate a team from Canada after these series conclude. But again, the one I got my eyeballs on and the one I hope does not get eliminated, the Carolina Hurricanes. They are, again, going to be playing Wednesday at 7 o'clock. 803-450-0086. 803-450-0086. If you want to talk anything about NIL, you can text us. You can also give us a call and leave us a message. We'd love to hear from you, and we will get you on the program on that front. Now, with NIL, as I mentioned, players reclassifying, I hesitate to call it the Wild West, but it does feel like we're kind of in that moment, and I am hopeful that it will settle down. One of the things I do like about what we currently see in the world of college sports is the fact that scheduling still can be glorious. You can get some really good matchups. And while maybe Virginia and Tennessee facing off to open the 2023 college football season in Nashville isn't mind-blowing to anyone, I still like an SEC-ACC matchup. Now, Tennessee and Virginia Tech played the battle at Bristol. You may remember this a couple of years ago. Bristol, Tennessee / Bristol, Virginia, actually where the two states have a border. You can go in a bar on one side of the road and you're in Bristol, Tennessee, and cross over and you are in Bristol, Virginia. So the two states certainly have some interconnection between one another. Tennessee Athletic Director Danny White saying pivoting to play a marquee non-conference opponent in Nashville made sense for multiple reasons, as the Volunteers were originally scheduled to play BYU out in Provo, Utah, but the Cougars are expected to officially begin play in the Big 12 next season, thus the schedules being shifted around. Now, Tennessee has played in that venue before, home of the NFL Titans, Nissan Stadium, twice against Group of Five teams. But this will be a great opportunity for these two programs that have not met since 1991 to play. Tennessee knocked the Cavaliers off 23-22 in the Sugar Bowl as Tony Thompson scored with just 31 seconds left. It will become just the fifth all-time meeting between the Volunteers and the Cavaliers. But yeah, I love that. I think that's a fantastic pickup for Virginia. It's good regionally. It's good for the ACC and the SEC. Anytime I think you can somewhat snuggle up, if you will, with a foe from nearby. And I like it on all fronts. 803-450-0086. The name game. We don't play it much here, but one of the silliest names in sports, I think, actually committed or is committing from a junior college to Oklahoma. I'll give you the kid's name. It's a familiar last name. It's the first name his family gave him that just takes his last name over the top. I'll tell you who it is. It's a famous football family, somewhat famous football family. When we get back here on the show that shakes the Southland, Clemson Sports Talk. Stay with us. Rolling along on a Tuesday. Okay, so there are names out there that you see them, and you scratch your head, and you think, how did mom and dad, you know, I don't want to say come up with that one, but how in the world did they stick with that one? Like, you always have the option, if the name is just bad, to go with the middle name if you must. And in lieu of reading off a list of names that probably sound completely fake and ridiculous, I'll leave that homework to you. I will say, there's one on Clemson's basketball staff, super nice guy. Nonetheless, and it's not Brad Brownell. No, we can say, I can say that on the air. I can say the other coach's name on the air, but you'd go, that can't be somebody's name, and it is. Well, how many of you remember this name? John David Booty. Now, I don't know how many of you do, but probably a lot of you do, because if you're my age, John David Booty played quarterback at Southern Cal during Pete Carroll's era, and it was, you know, the name Booty was just funny. His uncle Josh Booty was the quarterback at LSU. You might remember him as well. Well, this young man is the son of former LSU receiver Abram Booty. And the last time I remember talking about him was during his recruiting process. This young man, however, went to four different high schools as his family moved around. He finished his career in Allen, Texas. And though he wasn't heavily recruited out of high school, his name certainly caught people's ears and eyes, I guess, and his family lineage with a familiar name like Booty certainly kept him in the forefront of the not necessarily, you didn't have to be like a recruit Nick, somebody really deep in the weeds in recruiting. But if you were just a fringe guy on the recruiting trail, you probably knew of General Booty. No, that's right. That's right. That's his name. General Booty has committed. He will play college football the rest of his college football career at Oklahoma. Booty is a 6'3", 195-pound sophomore out of Tyler Junior College in Texas, and he has 3 years remaining to play with the Oklahoma Sooners. He said, quote, obviously my name is an attention grabber and people like to do headlines with it, but I like to show people that people with my play that I can back it up. He said, I've done that and I'm going to continue to do that as well. Booty, of course, will be called on after the departures of Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler, who both transferred out, both going to USC, one Southern Cal, one South Carolina. And he'll be in the mix, but I don't think he's going to be the starter. He will probably lead the all-name team out of the Pac-12 with a name like General Booty. It's one of those where I promise you, like, if your last name's Booty, to me there are just some things that should be off limits for your first name. And General is a word that would fall in the fringe category, in my estimation, of Booty first names that shouldn't go with it. I can think of some. I won't get it. I'll let you do all the imagining at home of names that wouldn't go well with Booty. General is a fringe response, in my opinion. Definitely not the worst. Even John David Booty was always a funny name. That sounded like somebody who shot a president in an alternate universe? Was it John Wilkes Booth? No, it was John David Booty. John David Booty? Surely you jest. I do not, sir. I do not. It's just like, what? General Booty, now starting at quarterback for your Oklahoma Sooners. Dun, 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 dun. General Booty is what? Is this kid's name? Yeah, General Booty. There it is. I don't know if he'll be. I don't know if he'll be at the top of the college football list, but I think he'll be at the top of the. Probably at the top of the Big 12's list as well. 803-450-0086. 803-450-0086. Text line. Phone line. Speaking of Double O, he's texted the program about 172 times. He's all over the program. We will get to that coming up in hour two. We do have Mike Yuva, Gamecock Central, on the docket. Find out about the Beamer Ball. Beamer Ball? Is that what the Beamer Ball? I think that's what it was called, which makes a lot of sense given the title of Shane Beamer's, you know, sports game and event now. You're playing Beamer Ball and then having people from the Carolina support group get together of the weekend. Mike Yuva was there. We'll find out a little bit more about what that event was like, and also get some insight into, I mentioned Spencer Rattler just a moment ago. Maybe get Mike's assessment of where he sees Spencer Rattler being as far as you know, the level of play in the SEC by comparison to his contemporaries around the conference. We'll do all that and much more with you right here on the show that shakes the Southland next.
It's time for Clemson Sports Talk with Lawton Swan.
Ready, just call me Swanee.
Tiger style. Tiger
is hour number two. That's Drive Time right here on the show that shakes the Southland. Clemson Sports Talk. Lawton Swan hanging out with you. Mike Yuva set to join us in just a little bit. We talk some high school softball out of the gates. A lot of fun with that topic, with the Lexington High School finish. Libby Warren walking it off last night in the bottom of the eighth, only to have that game protested and challenged by Somerville. They will commence from where that game left off, essentially, with Somerville at the plate in the bottom of the seventh inning. And the Lexington Wildcats will hope to get an opportunity in the top of the eighth inning. And I'm assuming Libby Warren will be coming back to the plate. So, weird scenario there. I hate it. I hate it the way it played out. I have no dog in the fight. I gave my piece on that earlier. If you missed it, catch the podcast. Mike Yuva joins us fresh off of a trip to the Beamer Ball. Shane Beamer's ball right there, Williams-Brice Stadium, as we peek over the fence into the backyard of the South Carolina Gamecocks. Mike, welcome in. What's up, man?
I'm doing well, Swanee. How you doing?
I'm good. Look, Mike, I know I'm the Clemson guy. I know you talk to the Gamecocks. They probably dislike me, but that's all right. I'll live. But you know I have been a fan of the hire of Shane Beamer. I saw lots of photos from friends that made their way out to Beamer's event, the Beamer Ball at Williams-Brice Stadium. I saw you were there. Give us some insight into what took place at that event and what that event means for South Carolina football in general.
Well, first off, and I know you love when I bring this up, first off, you're always welcome in Columbia. You went to USC for a little bit, so you're always welcome in Columbia. So that's number one. Number two, oh, actually, they were very disappointed. They said, "Where's Swanee?" Number two, it was an outstanding evening. I was telling you this before we hopped on the airways. I was very fortunate to get tickets at the very last minute because that is not a cheap event. So very grateful to be invited at the very last minute. It was neat, and I'll say this, Swanee. I've been to different events like that, whether it be attending them as I was on Saturday or covering them, you know, whether it be team events, whether it be not just college, but pro teams, celebrities, whatever the case may be. And this one just felt different. And I'm not just saying that just for the sake of saying it. It felt different. I think the real difference I felt was it was genuine and authentic. And that's what I wrote about on Gamecock Central yesterday, because when you have events like this, it's real easy, whether it be, like I said, a celebrity, a team, whatever, and they put their name on something, but you don't really see them at all. Maybe you'll see them for like 5 seconds up on stage. Right. That wasn't the case. Shane Beamer, his wife Emily, the entire coaching staff, they were out and about just talking with practically everybody there. And I think that was just one thing that it really impressed me, to the point where I was speaking to an 80-year-old lady that was there, and she's just said, it's just, you feel that something is different. There's something different in the culture. We hear that word so many times, and I get sick and tired of using that word when people are talking about a new coaching staff or for whatever sport it may be, but it is different, and the fans can feel it. The people that have been following this team well before even Spurrier was here. So I think it just makes you feel that what Shane Beamer is doing, from not just a win-loss standpoint, but much deeper and further than that off the field, we're trying to rekindle and be able to bring the fan base back together, which a lot of people started to say, you know what, I'm done with this program after what happened during the Wilmot Champ era. You need to be able to get that support. You can get the wins on the field. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. But when you're trying to create a successful program, you look at what Dabo Swinney was able to do. You need to be able to build a village, and it goes much further than just on the sidelines with your players.
So, Mike, so walk us through it just a little bit. Has Spurrier, when he was there, was there something similar, or is this just a completely new deal that no coach before him's ever done? I'm quite frankly just not really up on it. I know Dabo Swinney's got his event to raise money for charity. What was this event kind of surrounding, and then ultimately, have there been events similar to this in the past?
Well, to answer your first question, and I'm just the messenger, because that was the first thing that I wanted to be aware of by asking these different fans that were there, people that are boosters, have just been supporting this team for decades. Every single person that I spoke to said that they cannot remember an event like this. Now,
okay.
I'm sure there were differing events, but nothing to this magnitude. Nothing to this magnitude. This event, simply put, was just a night for people to be able to come out and see the coaches. And I've said this before, or I said this a little bit earlier when I mentioned, okay, I've been to different events. Stuff like this typically is just, okay, let's have an event. Let's get the boosters out. Let's kiss their butts. Let's tell them how great they are and this and that. And hopefully they'll donate some more money. Well, that's what I expected the night to be. But it just didn't feel that way. It just felt, like I said, very authentic, very genuine. I know I'm kind of repeating myself here, but it's the truth. It was a night where fans, boosters, they had an opportunity to come down onto Williams-Brice for an experience that, I mean, it was just very unique. The fact that you're able to go through the locker room, the game day locker room, out onto the field, got the flames coming up on the side. You get to walk on the field as if you're a player, but the only difference is you greet it with a glass of champagne. And then you have about, 50, 60 tables just spread out all over the field of Williams-Brice, a dance floor, live band. I mean, it was just this night of just being able to just celebrate being a fan and just being a supporter of Gamecock football. And if you're Shane Beam for this coaching staff, it was a way to be able to say, thank you. We appreciate it. We need you guys if we want to be able to take it to this next step.
Mike Yuva joins us each and every Tuesday afternoon. GamecockCentral.com is the website. gives us an opportunity to peek into the backyard of the South Carolina Gamecocks. And Mike, from that standpoint, what was the buzz, you know, amongst the fans that you spoke with, not necessarily about the event, but about year two of Shane Beamer's tenure there in Columbia?
Excitement. And I think it goes much further than just Shane Beamer himself and what happened at the end of last season to be able to get those 7 wins. The fact that you were able to get 7 wins after having 6 wins combined in the two previous seasons, you're able to end the year with a bowl win, something they haven't done in a long, long time. You have to go back to Hayden Hurst's final year with the Gamecocks back in that 2017-18 season. But you were able to propel that into something more, which was being able, of course, headlined by being able to pick up Spencer Rattler and being able to pick up several very good football players through the transfer portal. And I mentioned this the other day on Gamecock Central, and I always, you know, always have a soft spot in my heart for him just because he came from my school, Assumption, Division II guy. But you look at a guy like Carlin Spatel that transferred into South Carolina last season from the transfer portal, a Division II kid, and he just signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers over the weekend. I say that because you look at some of the guys that Beamer went after, bigger names, obviously, than a guy like Patel. But it's like, if Beamer can find a guy like Patel, and you look at some of the smaller school guys, quote unquote, smaller school guys, like Antoine Wells Jr. coming in from James Madison, that's a school that's not tiny, but of course it's not like a Power Five school by any means, but the guy's got some talent. So you just wonder, okay, what can Beamer do? So I think that's the thing. People are talking about some of the players on Saturday, some of the players that South Carolina has been able to acquire through the transfer portal. And it's just like, all right, what does he see in that player? Because some of these players, is everyone going to go to South Carolina? Certainly not. But what is it about this transfer that grabbed Beamer's attention? Is he going to bat 1,000? Certainly not. There'll be players that he'll miss on. I mean, that's part of football. I mean, shoot, go through the list of guys that Dabo Swinney has had, or Nick Sitt. It happens in college football. Transfers are even tougher, but it makes you just have that excitement. It's like, okay, this guy, what is special about him? So I think that was something that I took away from Saturday night, is that the buzz is there, but there's a lot of buzz going around about the transfer portal and some of the newer faces that are going to be coming here next season outside of just Spencer Rattler.
On Twitter, he's at Mike Yuva. Okay, so speaking of the buzz going on around the world of college sports, with the SEC eventually expanding and adding Texas and Oklahoma, schedules have already kind of been in the mouths and on the tongues of Gamecock fans, talking about what the future could look like with pods or divisions or whatever. The Atlantic Coast Conference brings up the facts that you know, they might be looking at a little different scheduling policy, if you will, to get teams the ability to play everybody in the league every other year, so that players get a chance to play at every venue during their time, you know, in a conference. I don't disagree. I think that's a great idea. I think it gives you a little bit more variety, maybe not as much as it sounds like off the hoof once you start to kind of dive into it a little bit. But, I mean, from the standpoint of South Carolina, Mike, and the potential of what their schedule could look like, you could say that in recent years, Carolina's kind of got the short end of the stick. They had Arkansas when the Razorbacks were really good. A&M joins the league. They end up getting connected with A&M. Now A&M is really good. Arkansas's not as good as they once were. How do you think scheduling down the road could influence positively and or negatively the success that Shane Beamer has in Columbia?
I'm always going to go back to a quote that George Rogers told me a couple of years ago. I think it was when South Carolina was going into the season a couple of years back and they had the toughest schedule in the country from an SOS standpoint, right? And George just looked at me dead face and just said, well, you're playing in the SEC. What do you expect? So I say that because, you know, certainly when you look over the last couple of years, has USC drawn the short straw? Of course. But at the same time, too, it is the SEC. And then when you really start to break it down, you also have Vandy in your division. And as Gamecock fans found out last year, that doesn't mean it's an automatic win. But that's as close to an automatic win in that conference as you'll get. So the point being is, as tough as things have been for South Carolina, it's just like, look, it's the SEC, man. It's the SEC. It could be worse. Imagine if South Carolina has had to play. Imagine if they had to play in the West and have to play Alabama, LSU, play all these teams the last couple of years. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, what it will come down to is once they figure out how they want to break up the SEC, and I know this has been a topic that has come up the last couple of weeks and last couple of months, which is pods. And if they went into pods, the question is who would be in South Carolina pods. Now, you know, we could go down a rabbit hole of creating a popsicle headache here. You would think that Georgia or Florida, those two teams in particular, would be considered to be a good fit along with South Carolina to be all together, and who knows who that other team would be. But, you know, the bottom line is those two teams right now, you look at Florida historically, Florida's been a pretty good team. Right now, they might be an absolute train wreck this upcoming season. Georgia, of course, the defending national champs. Well, what can they do with that in the next couple of years? So I think it's one of those things that it'll be a year-by-year case. Unless you're in a pod with, like, Alabama, I think it's more so, okay, we just got to go out there and compete and just pray to God that we don't draw the short stick every year. But it's certainly not going to always be like that. But when you're in a tough conference, it's tough to look at and be like, all right, our schedule's pretty easy or pretty hard. I mean, you look across the SEC, most of the time, those teams are going to be ranked towards the top of the NCAA when it comes to strength of schedule.
Mike Yuva is on Twitter at Mike_UVA. He works for GamecockCentral.com. So with Spencer Rattler coming into the program this season and high expectations surrounding his impending arrival, we don't know who all the starting quarterbacks are going to be in the SEC. We know a couple, obviously, and certainly Bryce Young at Alabama is going to be at the top of the mark. But in your estimation, where would you probably place Rattler? I mean, is he potentially a top three quarterback in the SEC, or is he maybe just outside of that somewhere in, say, the top five or six, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'd say somewhere top five, maybe even top four. I think the challenging part, Swanee, is the fact that we have not really seen him with this group. You know, yeah, we had a chance to see him in the spring game, but it's the spring game. I mean, really, what are you going to learn? And I remember asking Beamer about this, how much stock he puts into the spring game, because, you know, naturally fans, naturally us in the media, we're going to see someone perform, whether they did well, whether they did bad, and we're going to make a big fuss about it for the next couple months leading up until training camp in August. But I say that because there were a lot of good things that we saw from Spencer Rattler, no question about it. But we know that it comes down to much more than just what Rattler is going to do. How will the offensive line look? You know, they were ranked second to last in the SEC last year in terms of sacks allowed. Now, does that all fall back on the offensive line? No. But at the same time, too, that's just how it's going to break down when you're looking at from a sacks allowed standpoint. How will the receivers look? The room right now looks better than it's looked the last couple of years. Will those guys be able to take that next step? Running back room, very talented running back room, once again on paper. Will they be able to take that next step? So there's so many questions around this offense. You can go back to Marcus Satterfield, the offensive coordinator. A lot of people calling for his head after last season. He's back again. What will the playbook look like? So I say all that because not to make excuses, but, I mean, shoot, doesn't matter if you put, you know, Tim Tebow out there, Johnny Manziel, it doesn't matter who you throw out there, with Trevor Lawrence out there, the offense itself needs to be able to gel, because the guy could have the best arm in the world. If he's not being able to get protected, or if he's getting, you know, sacked four or five times, which we've seen the last couple of seasons, go ask Jake Bentley how that turned out for him. You know, there's so many things that you got to look into for South Carolina football. I mean, you could say this for any team, but for USC in particular over the last couple of seasons, you got to be able to give your quarterback some time. So if they can give Rattler time, I could certainly see him having one of the best seasons in the SEC from a quarterback standpoint, despite the fact that, you know, Bryce Young is going to receive plenty of praise, and rightfully so. But Rattler could be a very interesting story to follow as the season goes on, especially if South Carolina as a whole is able to surprise some people early on, despite having that tricky schedule with Arkansas week two, and then, of course, playing Georgia in week three.
Mike Yuva, again, with us for just about another minute and a half. Mike, I'll get you out of here on this, not to put a little salt in the wound, but I am a Carolina Hurricane fan. But I was telling our listeners, and this is what I don't think people in the South tend to appreciate about hockey. That score is 3-1 with 3 minutes to go. They look at a review of what a play that could have possibly made it 4-1. And then, of course, Boston pulls their goalie. They're playing 6-on-5. And it is a thrilling 3 minutes down the stretch. They do get one goal and then a couple of shots late. But tell me, Mike, as a guy who appreciates that sport, or at least don't tell me, tell our listeners what they're missing when they're not watching playoff hockey.
Playoff hockey is awesome, and it was great to be able to see Twitter. There's a lot of people that I follow either being in the South or, you know, not necessarily big hockey fans. I do follow some people still back up in Boston, but the point being is to have as many Game 7s as they did on Sunday alone, if that can't grab your attention to just want to watch it just a little bit, you're missing out. But playoff hockey as a whole, never mind just Game 7s, it's just fast-paced. There's less commercials. There's more action. Players aren't really, you know, playing, you know, they're not playing around. They're not thinking around. They're not wasting any added energy. They want to be able to go out there. They want to win. They want to win the Stanley Cup. So it's a lot of fun. I hate that the Bruins are already out because of the freaking Hurricanes, but that's okay. You know, I'm back on my green teamer ways with the Boston Celtics as they play in the Eastern Conference Finals now against the Miami Heat. So I got that to fall back on, Swanee, but it certainly isn't playoff hockey, that's for sure.
Follow him on Twitter at Mike_UVA, the Biscuit King of the South. Mike, buddy, take care, my man.
Appreciate it, Swanee.
803-450-0086. You know what? Make that 0086. Speaking of 00, he hit us up. We'll talk about it next. Back at it on the show that shakes the South late again. Thank you to Mike Yuva for joining us. We were talking about scheduling. Well, Andrea Adelson from ESPN did some of the legwork here on this. And I do want to say that when I initially thought about the 3-5-5 model with Clemson, I said I thought Florida State, Georgia Tech, NC State made most sense for Clemson being their permanents. And, of course, if you do that, then you, of course, give Florida State Clemson, Georgia Tech Clemson, and NC State Clemson. And then kind of work your way through it. Now, Adelson attempted to come up with this as the best way she could for the entire league, but said, I have no idea how North Carolina, Duke, and NC State, along with Wake Forest, will work out since they've gotten this entire, you know, three-team deal set up, and those are four schools in the state of North Carolina. NC State and Wake Forest might not want to continue on an annual basis because they've been playing a lot in the Atlantic Division. So maybe that's the way it'll break up. But here's what she came up with as far as the pairings in the league. Again, Clemson with Florida State, NC State, and Georgia Tech. I like that. Florida State with Clemson, Miami, and Georgia Tech. I think Clemson and Miami have to be done deals for FSU. I could flex on Georgia Tech if I needed to, but we'll keep it for now. That would give Georgia Tech, Clemson, Florida State, and Duke probably pretty fair to catch Duke as your third team when you're catching the Seminoles and Tigers. NC State would get Clemson, North Carolina, potentially Wake Forest. In that scenario, Miami would get Florida State, Virginia Tech, and Pitt. I like Miami and Florida State. I like Miami and Virginia Tech. North Carolina would get NC State, Duke, and Virginia. Old school ACC. Lock it up. I like it. Duke would get North Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Wake Forest. I could maneuver again on Georgia Tech with Duke if need be. But for now, given the fact that the Yellow Jackets, again, would face Clemson and Florida State, hey, you gotta give Georgia Tech a little bit of a break. Virginia with North Carolina, Virginia Tech and Louisville, not bad there. Virginia Tech with Virginia, Miami, and Boston College, you get those old Big East rivals. I like it. Wake Forest with Duke, Louisville, and NC State every year. Louisville, no real significant rivals in the ACC. Kind of weird, but they've got them with Wake, Virginia, and Syracuse. That's about all you got, Louisville, unfortunately. I think their best rival might be Clemson, given how good some of those games have been against them. Pitt with Miami, Cuse, and Boston College. Big East, good for you. Cuse with Pitt, Boston College, and Louisville. And then Boston College with Virginia Tech, Cuse, and Pitt. Again, Big East. Not much else to say on that front. It's tough, I think, for Boston College and Louisville because they don't necessarily have rivals yet in the league. And because of that, you know, I mean, they might have rivals in their own mind. Like some people might think Boston College and Clemson because of the O'Rourke McFadden Trophy, but that's just not the case. I will say, though, when you're putting this together, and I'm not trying to protect Clemson, Florida State, Miami, you know, the more notable names in the world of college football, but I do think that at least if you're going to be willing to be a little more flexible, right, and switch this up every once in a while, you can lean away just a little bit on always attempting to protect those schools, so to speak, by making sure their rivalries continue to exist. But I think initially you probably want to make sure that you've allowed those schools to continue to play one another because of how significant those games are. And it's not as if it's a new league either, but what you want to make sure that you're doing is when people are still tuning into the league, they're seeing marquee games. And I know with the 355, you can still get those quite frequently, but I think at least at the beginning of this, any little change, you want to make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck. And so you want to line up Clemson and Florida State, and maybe Clemson and Miami and Virginia Tech, and Miami and Florida State. Like, you want to have those games because if you're going to rewrite the way the schedules are done, and you don't put in a situation that keeps some tradition around, then all of a sudden your league doesn't throw out as good a contest as frequently as expected. And that's another reason why I would propose to all that the thing to do here would be to say, but we're going to be flexible. And if in 8 years you want to redo it, because now there may be a, like, let's say that all of a sudden Clemson and Virginia Tech have played in the ACC championship 4 out of 6 years or 4 out of 8 years or maybe more or whatever. And you're like, man, these teams are going at each other. Let's make this, because these are now two top 10 teams or top 5 teams, let's make this a regular season game as well and try to get more bang for the proverbial buck. You're not going to hear any whining and crying and complaining from me. I think a model like this should be embraced with great flexibility for the future, to make sure that the league can reduce the feeling of being a bit stagnant and create marquee matchups, enhanced, let me say that, marquee matchups down the road by virtue of being willing to switch up who your permanent team is every so often if necessary. With a quick break, we'll bounce back with more here on the Tuesday edition of the show that shakes the Southland. It is Clemson Sports Talk on Fox Sports Radio 1400 The Midlands, heard around the world on the iHeart Radio app. The show that shakes the Southland. Clemson Sports Talk, Lawton Swan with you here. So yesterday I was talking about tapes, old school, and I did get a text message from our buddy Billy listening to the program, and Billy was talking about the tape recorder, the VHS camera that his granddad had. He says, Swanee, my granddad... This is great. My granddad's first VHS camera was ginormous. It essentially had a full-size VCR player that you wore on a strap on one hip and then the huge camera over your shoulder on the other. Dude, I remember those. I can see it now on his hip. And it was, you know what, Billy, what's scary about it? That thing he carried on his shoulder was bigger than a typical VCR of this era. Like, if you were to go get one, by the way, don't look at the price on like eBay of a VCR. You'll wish you'd hoarded your VCRs instead of probably chunked them, because there came a point where, I mean, honest to goodness, you could get a VCR for like $29. They were cheap as all get out. I have one in a closet that I occasionally use. Occasionally to convert like old family videos. $48, that's not too bad. $55, but I have seen them on these websites for hundreds of dollars. Maybe depending on how many heads it has, or, you know, how good, you know, if it eats tapes. The highest priced one right now you can bid on, I don't know why you'd want this, it is a rare lot Black Diamond Aladdin VHS and a Magnavox VCR recorder, high quality combo. So wait for it here. You get the tape and the VCR for a mere $24,753. Now, I know that is absurd. Black Diamond apparently is some kind of banned edition of those movies. Oh, I had no idea. Nonetheless, VCRs can be ridiculously high priced. I do remember, though, going to the video, what we call it, it was in Barnwell, we didn't have Blockbuster. We had Video House, number one and two. I can remember going to Video House, though, and you had to choose, did you want to get the Beta Max or the VHS? I mean, that was prior to Beta Max kind of folding up as far as their movie rentals. I think they kind of stuck around in the television industry for a few years. Let's see. Double O, I mentioned him earlier. Double O says he listens to the show to put him to sleep. He also said Golden State with the three Splash Brothers going to get that title. He is a big Golden State fan. And after saying that the Wildcats did not win, Double O says that he is going to go back to sleep. So thank you, Double O, for waking up from your slumber. Yeah, some would say Double O doesn't need any beauty sleep. I might not be one of those someones. But since he's asleep, he won't hear that. So I'm good. 803-450-0086. 803-450-0086. One of the things I did see on social media, I know there's a lot of buzz right now around the fact that the new Top Gun movie apparently is coming out at some point. 36 years ago today, the original Top Gun premiered back in 1986. Ryan McGee from ESPN, who's been a guest on this program frequently, tweeted, I saw it in the theater five times. In related news, I had no girlfriend. I'm about to admit something about Top Gun that I don't know I've ever admitted here on the air. I did not watch Top Gun until probably 2015, maybe later. If earlier than that, not much earlier than that. Yeah, I never had any real, like, you know, Tom Cruise was like this huge actor. Tom Cruise is like this huge actor. And I don't know if I was supposed to see these movies that he was in when I was growing up, but I never saw Risky Business. I never saw All the Right Moves. I never saw Top Gun. I never saw The Color of Money. I never saw Cocktail. Like, I never saw Born on the 4th of July. Movies of Tom Cruise's that I saw, Rain Man, Days of Thunder, A Few Good Men, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire. I did see the Mission Impossible movies, most of them, I guess. I actually saw Vanilla Sky. That was weird. I saw Minority Report. But, like, I haven't seen The Last Samurai. I haven't seen Valkyrie. I haven't seen... I don't know what it is about me and Tom Cruise. But I just don't see Tom Cruise. Maybe I just don't like him as an actor. I have no idea. I cannot explain it to you why I didn't see Top Gun until I was like 40. I've never been a Tom Cruise fan. Never. And I don't really have a reason why. I never got into it. Never saw Interview with a Vampire. Never saw Eyes Wide Shut. Never saw any of that. You guys might have seen it all. Never saw War of the Worlds. None of it. Final segment. Coming up here on the show that shakes the Southland, Clemson Sports Talk, right after this.
What have you done for me lately? It's a fair question. Just don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Don't forget history. Lucky for us at Clemson, the answer to the questions, what have you done for me lately, and what have you done always, are the same. We win.
Final segment on a Tuesday afternoon, dare I say, cruising along on a Tuesday afternoon. Thank you. Yes, I'll be here all week. 803-450-0086. Did get in some of O's text messages. He texted me back, though. He said, Swanee, it wasn't 100 messages, it was 6. Yeah, O, it was, but it feels like 100. It feels like 100 because what O forgets, and I think I've told him this, and I'll tell you, when you text the program, 803-450-0086, I get the text message. I also get an email. That comes to my watch as well. And so the whole time I'm trying to do the show, bling, 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 and the watch picks up both. So it just constantly, oh, there's another one. Beamer ball, 7-5 this year. Spencer Rattler will help the team, but they're going to need more help than that. O, the masked texter, if you will. 803-450-0086. That's the way you can get in, just like O does. Also, be a part of our show over on our website. Put the .com on it, doggone it, ClemsonSportsTalk.com, where right now get 3 months of premium coverage for just $1. After that, $63.17 for 1 year of coverage. Also, We'd love to have you follow us on Twitter at Clemson Sports, where over 24,000 people currently follow us, and we want to take that to 50,000. Sticking on the college football front, though, the Notre Dame-Ohio State game will be a 7:30 kickoff September the 3rd on ABC. College game day will be in town. LeBron James tweeted, "What's the date of this? I need it ASAP." And College game day said, "Meet us in Columbus and we'll have you on the show." Again, that's September the 3rd for that ball game. Clemson, of course, will open their season in Atlanta against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, and there is potential that the starting quarterback could be former Clemson Tiger Tyson Pumachon. Pumachon earlier today announced his commitment to the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. So Pumachon versus Uiagalelei, is it possible? Perhaps. Perhaps it is. By the way, don't forget tonight, coming up at 6 o'clock, right as we get off the air, the Clemson Tigers will take on the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, who have a national championship trophy in the case in Conway. Kudos to them for that magical run, huh? I know it was painful for Clemson fans, but my goodness, that was awesome. To see the Chanticleers win it all. On the bump for the Tigers, the righty Nick Hoffman pitching for Coastal Carolina, Matthew Podolak. The game can be seen on ESPN Plus or listened to on ClemsonTigers.com. So, again, that matchup set to take place in about an hour. Clemson enters at 32-20. Coastal Carolina is 33-16-1. The Tigers lead the all-time series 47-11, dating back to their first matchup in 1986. Clemson also leads at Coastal 11-4. The Chanticleers swept Troy in a three-game road series last weekend. They're batting .284. And have a 4.79 ERA. So the Tigers and Coastal Carolina facing off the final midweek matchup for Clemson this season before a weekend series at home against the Boston College Eagles. Clemson currently, when you look at the Atlantic Coast Conference standings, a game up in the loss column. Clemson is 10-16. Duke is 10-17 for the last spot in the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament. Fortunately for Clemson, their final series comes against the worst team in the league, Boston College, who is 5-22. While the Duke Blue Devils have their final series against Virginia Tech on the road, and the Hokies have been one of the best teams in the Coastal Division this year. Second place, as a matter of fact, behind the Miami Hurricanes at 16-9. So, advantage Clemson in terms of home field and a worse opponent. If the Tigers don't make it in to the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament, it's their own fault at this point, given the way things have set up for the final series for both the Tigers and the Blue Devils, who are battling to stay out of the bottom of the ACC and miss the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament. Again, thank you for hanging out with us. Always appreciate you being a part of the program. Our text line and phone line is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I absolutely look forward to spending some time with you tomorrow talking about your Clemson Tigers. Until then, head over to our website, put the .com on it, doggone it. That's ClemsonSportsTalk.com, and we got to get out of here. Until Wednesday, as always, y'all take care now, and go Tigers!